Is that why you hit your wife? Withdrawn? Is that why you drink and pop pills? Withdrawn? Are you a virgin? Withdrawn.
Says here you robbed a hospital. Why'd you do that?
Yeah, I'm not guilty.
That's not what the other lawyer said.
Actually, I was going to stay in my office tonight and work on my law blog.
Of course, the blah 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 law blog. Wow, you, sir, are a mouthful.
The jury is instructed to disregard its own testimony.
Your Honor, the prosecution rests.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 115. I'm your host, Thomas Smith. That over there is your other host, Andrew Torres. How are you doing today, Andrew?
Oh, I am super excited for today's episode. So.
Me too. We have Chris Cluey on the show. He is so fun to talk to. I spent hours talking to him at the Inciting Incident live event. He is as big a nerd as he, no, a bigger nerd than he is an NFL great punter, which is such a unique thing. You know, there's not a whole lot of other people in the world who are both the biggest nerd and an amazing pro athlete. There's not that many of them. But we got one for you. And we're going to be talking about Kaepernick's lawsuit against the NFL because, wouldn't you know it, Chris Cluey has a bit of insight into that, quite a bit of relevant experience in the field.
And yeah, Thomas, given that intro, I intend to ask a lot of legal questions, right? So
we'll see if he's a triple threat. If he's a nerd athlete and aspiring lawyer, we'll see.
Yes. So even if you're not a big football fan, we're going to talk about, we're going to try and bring Chris in to talk about the nuts and bolts of how you would try one of these cases. So stick around, let us know. And particularly let us know at when you're done, if you're one of the people who calls it sports ball and is sort of proud of not being a sports fan, if you like the show anyway, because that's our goal.
Absolutely. Before we get to that though, one more plug for your bonus Patreon special with Michael Ropps on Serial/Undisclosed. I guess he's an amateur expert on an armature expert on those topics.
Michael was the person who suggested I listen to Undisclosed. And then when the controversy erupted over Undisclosed, he has a very different Twitter name. And so I was engaging. I was like, well, you know, there's this one person out there who's an Undisclosed fan who's like kind of reasonable about this. And so I sent him a message and I was like, hey, if you'd like to talk, let's talk offline. And he sent me an email. He was like, oh, I'm Michael Ropps. I'm Thomas's chief goon. And I'm a, you know, longstanding patron of the show. And I was like, oh, well, I was glad I was nice to you then.
Hi, I'm Thomas's chief goon. I like that. That's his CV. That's his resume. Yeah. You may remember me from such things as I'm Thomas's chief goon. that's awesome. So check that out. We'll find out. I don't know. I suppose maybe later on you'll have to do an Andrew was wrong and Adnan was innocent. I don't know. They'll have to go on Patreon to find out.
That's right. It's only for patrons. It's a free episode bonus for all of our patrons at any level. And that's, you know, hey, if this is yet another reason, if you love this show, if we're your commute ride, if we're what you listen to when you're mowing the lawn or cooking dinner, which those are the times when I listen to podcasts, kick us a buck. And we do all sorts of fun stuff for our patrons, like unannounced special deep dives into controversial episodes. So,
and with that said, let's get over to our interview with Chris Cluey. And we are joined by Chris Cluey. Chris, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. How's it going?
I'm doing great. I just have to say, when we did the Inciting Incident live show and I got to ask you every possible football question I could think of after, it was one of my favorite memories. It was so great. questions like, you know, why can't punters kick field goals and vice versa? To which you said you actually can kick field goals. So that was
right. Just not to the NFL cool. level.
Right, right. Exactly. That was super cool. I am really excited to have you here today. Of course, punter with the Vikings forever. And, you know, we're going to talk about some of the aspects of your career, I suppose. But Andrew, do you want to tee up specifically what we're going to discuss today?
Yeah. So the question on everyone's minds, Colin Kaepernick, just ex-49ers quarterback, just filed a grievance with the NFL. We have gotten a copy of that grievance. We've posted it to the website. Took a little digging and asking around, but we managed to get a copy. That grievance accuses the NFL and its teams of colluding to prevent Colin Kaepernick from getting a job, getting even a tryout in many cases.
That's not something you would know anything about.
Right. And the allegation is the reason that he's been blacklisted is because of his, you know, now public stance that has been ridiculed by the president and vice president of the United States involving ceremonially taking a knee during the national anthem in order to protest racial and social injustice. And he contends that he's been blacklisted from the NFL on that basis. And so I thought, is it possible for us to find an expert on being blacklisted from the NFL?
And I mean, I think I was blacklisted from the NFL. I never got a tryout, anything like that. But I think Chris maybe is a better, slightly better example, I guess.
Maybe. I have some small experience with this matter.
So, Chris, for those, I imagine almost all of our audience is probably familiar with your case, but for those who are not, if you want to kind of give a brief summary of your involvement with social justice issues and what happened.
Sure. Yeah. So back in 2012, I was playing with the Minnesota Vikings, and it was during the off season of that year. And in the state of Minnesota, a constitutional amendment had been proposed that would ban same-sex marriage within the state. And a group called Minnesotans for Marriage Equality had contacted me and asked if I was interested in helping defeat this amendment. And I said, sure, I don't think enshrining discrimination in a state's constitution is a particularly wise idea, so I am more than happy to help defeat this thing. And so I went, the very first thing I did was I went to the team and I said, hey, this is something that I'm interested in doing. You know, how can I go about doing this? Because I understand that this is potentially tricky, you know, political ground. And the team, their lawyer got back to me and he said, yeah, you know, it's fine if you want to do this, just make sure you do it on your own time. Make it clear that you're speaking as Chris Cluey, private citizen, not Chris Cluey, you know, speaking for the Minnesota Vikings. I was like, that sounds fair. That's this is something I'll do on my own time. Won't be a problem. So the first, let's see, I think I started working with the group in, it was like May. The next 3 months or so, 2 or 3 months, did a couple like radio spot things for them and then just like some various speaking engagement things. And then right before the season started, so that would have been September, there was an article on Pro Football Talk about how a Maryland state senator, Emmett Seaburns Jr., had told the Ravens that they needed to silence one of their players, Brandon Iambadejo, from speaking out on same-sex rights issues because there's no place for that in football. No one wants to hear about that kind of stuff. And the Ravens had basically told him to go F himself. And I saw this letter and I was like, hold on, this is a, you know, this is an issue on two fronts. The first front is why can't someone speak out for same-sex rights? Like, why are you so involved in wanting people to not talk about this? Like, the only way that people getting married, if they're LGBTQ, the only way that affects you is if you are an LGBTQ individual who is looking to get married. Like, that's literally the only way it affects you. But then the second issue was he was an elected state representative who wrote his letter on official state stationery. And I was like, that seems like a First Amendment violation. So there's two things I can go after him. And so I wrote a letter called It was titled, and so this title was actually not my idea. I actually didn't have a title for the letter. It was Tommy Craggs at Deadspin who put the title on, and it was a fantastic choice because I think that's what helped make the letter go pretty viral. So the letter was titled, "They Won't Magically Turn You Into a Lustful Cock Monster. An NFL Player Speaks Out on Bigotry to a Maryland State Senator." And so that went up. I want to say it was like Friday afternoon, because I remember I finished practice and I saw, you know, I was starting to get some responses on Twitter. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You know, some people are reading the article. Hopefully they, you know, they figure out everyone should have the same rights as everyone else. Like, we're all American citizens. We should all be free to live our own lives. Then Friday night, it started blowing up even more. Saturday, it was blowing up even more. I got called into my head coach's office who said, Chris, you can't talk about this anymore. Don't talk about it. I'm like, well, respectfully, I already had that conversation with the lawyer and like, this is something that I've been doing. And so then, you know, I was kind of like, okay, I'm not really sure what kind of ground I'm on here. Sunday, we go to play against the Jaguars. And the owner of the team, Ziggy Wilf, comes up to me and says, Chris, I think that letter was great. It's fantastic. You know, you're doing a great job. And so then on Monday, when the head coach calls me into his office again and continues to repeat his point that, hey, you can't talk about this. Like, don't talk about this anymore. I'm like, well, I'm getting conflicting messages here because you're saying don't talk about this. The owner is saying, hey, good job. I don't know who to believe here. And so basically, the letter went super viral. We ended up defeating the amendment in Minnesota. And then I think 6 months later, same-sex marriage became legal in the state, which was pretty awesome. And throughout the course of the season, my special teams coach began making progressively more and more homophobic remarks and sort of like nasty interactions. And at the time, I was like, okay, I've had experience, obviously, with like ribbing in NFL locker rooms. You know, guys will make fun of anything. Like, nothing is safe. Like, if you do anything, you should expect to be made fun of. But it felt very much like it had crossed a line to where it was no longer, okay, this is kind of the normal razzing I would expect to get from guys. This is now something more. Like, this feels like something serious. And then I had a decent year. It wasn't one of my best years, but, I mean, my stats were still in line with what they had always been. I still had 1 year left on my contract. I was like, okay, cool. You know, I have 1 year left. I'm probably going into a contract year. I'll have to play, you know, really well to get a really good contract. If I play mediocre, then I'll probably just get a mediocre contract. Cause at that point I had already established, I think, almost every punting record for the Vikings. And like, I'd generally been a top 10 punter, each year I had played. So stats wise, like I was doing pretty well. And then during the draft, they drafted a punter in the fifth round. And that was when I realized, oh, I'm done with the Vikings. And so that was when I started writing stuff down and thinking back to all the interactions on that previous year, because from a football perspective, that move did not make sense. It was, my salary was not onerous on the team. They would save a minimal amount of money by cutting me. And in terms of my performance versus other punters with similar performance, I would actually cost them less compared to those other guys. So
yeah.
So so they wasted a draft pick.
Oh, yeah,
on
yeah.
A punter that wasn't even really right. Going to do probably any better than you. And, you know, they had a perfectly good punter who they were paying a reasonable amount.
Right, exactly. Well, and that was one of the other things, like, announcers at the time even noted, like, why are the Vikings getting a punter here? They still need linebackers. They still need receivers. You know, why are they using this fifth round pick on a punter? And again, it was like, I have some suspicions as to why they might have used that fifth round pick on a punter. So anyway, I knew I wasn't going to be on the Vikings. So I had some conversations with them where I was like, okay, it's clear, you know, I'm not going to be on the team anymore. And so they let me go. I was with the Raiders during the preseason of 2013, ended up getting beaten out by Marquette King, which was, that one was a pretty fair competition. And Marquette obviously has turned out to be a really good punter in the NFL. So in that instance, I don't think there was any foul play. I think that was a legit competition. Marquette happened to win it. And I think it was a choice for the Raiders between, do you go for the veteran guy that you'll probably keep for like 4 or 5 years? Or do you take a chance on the young guy who, if he works out, you know, he's going to be your guy for like 8 to 12 years. And I can't complain with the choice they made because I was in that similar position when the Vikings claimed me. So this time I was on the other side. So I had no problems there. But later on during that season, I had about three different tryouts, one of which was an actual serious tryout. The other two were just Call of the Wild. Like, the punters had performed poorly the week before, and coaches bring in, you know, five or six.
I was trying to inspire the punter, light a fire under the
right,
the
exactly.
leg.
Yeah, it's it, you know, the instant you show up for one of those tryouts, that there's no chance any of you are getting a job. This is just a, you know, it's a circus. Like, it's to, yeah. to try to make that other punter, you know, think that, oh, the team's going to replace me. So two of those, I was like, okay, none of us are going to get the job. And none of us did get the job. It was clearly a Call of the Wild. The third one, though, was when Cincinnati, it was near the end of the year, they were looking to make a playoff run. Like, they were pretty close to a wild card spot. It was a Sunday night game, and I remember it because I was in Minnesota at the time, because the Vikings had just brought me back as part of the All Metrodome 25-year team as the punter. So the best punter of the past 25 years was me. So they honored all of us at you know, halftime at the game, and it was an interesting crowd reaction. I think it was about half cheers, half boos. And so anyways, I was at a restaurant with some friends, some sushi place, and they had the game on in the background. And you know, I was kind of glancing up and watching it from time to time. And the Bengals punter, Kevin Huber, he got his jaw broken on a punt return. Like, some dude just blindsided him and, you know, put his helmet right into his jaw. And the instant I saw it, I'm like, I'm probably going to be getting a call from the Bengals because they're going to need a punter. And sure enough, next morning, get a call from the Bengals. How, you know, where are you at? How quickly can you get to Cincinnati for a tryout? I was like, well, I'm in Minnesota now. If you can get me a flight there, I'll need you to provide me cleats because I literally don't have anything with me. But other than that, yeah, I'm ready. And so I went and did that tryout. That was one where I felt I had won that tryout. I felt I had outkicked the other guys. I had shown the coaching staff, you know, what they wanted me to do, directional punting, hang time, everything that they needed. I was able to do it. And it was, you know, I was clearly the veteran of the group and the established player of the group. And so the first clue that I had that I wasn't going to be the Bengals punter was when the ops guy came into the room where we were all sitting and said, "So Chris, you're flying back to LAX, right?" I was like, wow. No, John Wayne, please. And so, so the guy they ended up going with, he had shanked a couple during the tryouts. They kept him for 2 weeks and then cut him because he shanked a couple during the games. And I was like, yeah, that's about what I expected. Wow. And then they brought in Zoltan Mesko, who had punted for the Patriots for a while. He's a great dude, a really good punter, but he hadn't been at the tryouts. And so in my head, I'm thinking, okay, they need a veteran guy. They went with a veteran guy, but they didn't go with the veteran guy who was there, who they saw could do what they needed that guy to do, and instead they went with someone else. Well, I can only think of one reason why that would be the case. And it was at that point that I knew, okay, I'm not going to play in the NFL again, because that was the optimum situation for me to be yeah. on a team. And I didn't get on the team. So I was like, well, it's never going to get any better than that. So let's bring it all out in the open and see how the dust settles.
Yeah. And now might be a good time explain the legal standard, because I mean, some of our listeners might be sitting there going like, well, you know, Chris, you said you had a fair tryout with the Raiders. So, you know, doesn't that prove you weren't blackballed? And kind of before we get to that, the legal standard on collusion, this is Article 17 of the collective bargaining agreement, says, "No club, its employees or agents shall enter into any agreement, express or implied, with the NFL or any other club, its employees or agents, to restrict or limit individual club decision making as follows: 1, whether to negotiate or not to negotiate with any player; 3, whether to offer or not offer a player contract to any player; or 5, concerning the terms and conditions of employment offered to any player for inclusion or included in a player contract." Obviously, I'm quoting that in relevant part. So in other words, what you have to show is that one team either colluded with the NFL, or that two or more teams colluded amongst themselves to deny someone an employment opportunity. So the fact that
a tryout doesn't necessarily disprove that, because
right.
it could still be that they colluded to not give him a
right.
contract.
Right.
And more specifically, right, like, we use terms like blackball. Blackball implies all 32 teams say no, 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 no. But, you know, if four or five teams are willing to sign you, but 28 teams have agreed not to, or two teams have agreed not to, that's still a violation of the CBA. And it's really easy to see why that is, right?
Right.
Like, because there are a very, very limited number of punter jobs in the NFL.
Yeah, there's only 32. Like, that's all there are.
and if the teams that are willing, have that job filled, as you pointed out, looking at the Cincinnati situation kind of being, an ideal situation, that that there may be only a couple of openings that come up every year. So
yeah, no, and I think the other thing too that so one thing that is a little different from my situation compared to Kaepernick's situation is that I ended up suing only the Vikings specifically for wrongful termination. Whereas Colin is going after the entire league for, for collusion. And I think it would have been much harder for me to prove collusion. I think I might have been able to do it. But the problem is that the sort of the difference between the skill floor and skill ceiling of a good punter in the NFL is very close, right? Like, you can have a guy who's the best in the league, and someone who's 95% as good as that guy is probably still going to be really good. Like, he'll still be really close to him. Whereas at the quarterback position, you can have Colin Kaepernick, and then you could have Blake Bortles or Johnny Manziel. Like, it's very obvious that one of these people should not be out on the field. So, like,
let's start with that. I mean, I'd like to get your opinion. I have mine, but it is informed only as a football fan. What's your assessment of Colin Kaepernick's talent level as a quarterback? Is he an NFL level starting quarterback, backup quarterback? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think he is in, if not the top 10, then at least the top 15 of NFL starting quarterbacks. And I mean, because remember, we're talking about a guy who 4 years ago, 5 years ago, like, his team was one play away from winning the Super Bowl. Like, yeah. they were there. And then the Yorks got rid of Harbaugh and everything just fell apart. And I mean, Kaepernick, he didn't play great. But at the same time, when the entire coaching staff gets gutted and everything gets changed, like, generally a new coach is going to bring in his own offensive philosophy, and that might not mesh with what the quarterback can do. That being said, Kaepernick still had a decent year. I mean, yeah, he wasn't lighting the world on fire, but he statistically performed better than the vast majority of guys who are getting signed for jobs now. Like, you look at some of the guys that are getting signed for jobs now, and it's just like, that guy should be retired. And some of them were retired. Like,
when they brought back John Kitna for that one playoff game.
Right. It's like you're digging quarterbacks out of the trash heap all in an effort not to sign Colin Kaepernick. And I mean, case in point, the situation in Green Bay right now, like, Green Bay absolutely needs a quarterback. And, you know, Brett Hundley, he's okay. Like, he's a UCLA guy. I got to stick up for him because I went to UCLA too. But at the same time, with the way that Green Bay's offense is designed, like, their offensive line right now is really bad. And they've had a couple injuries, so it's even worse. They need a mobile quarterback who can move around and throw the ball. Guess who's a mobile quarterback who can move around and throw the ball that's available? Like, it makes perfect sense for Colin Kaepernick to at least get a chance to try out for that job, but he won't.
See time and time again, when a quarterback goes down and they bring out the backup, it's not even close. Like, it's not, like you were saying, the difference in skill level between punters, well, it's pretty comparable. It's a very tight, field, but with quarterbacks, it's amazing when you see the backup go in, and he looks like a regular guy trying to play sometimes.
Right.
Like,
yeah. It doesn't look good.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Well, and let me, I mean, I don't want to make it too much of a football podcast, although, we're all,
why not?
Yeah. The three of us, I think, would be happy in that direction. But let me give you the argument, right? Cause the argument on the other side is, it's not even clear that Kaepernick has the skills. So, you can't begin to sort of make this inference. So I love the fact that you, Chris, are sort of out there saying, no, he's a top 15. I mean, he's upper half, clearly. The other argument that I've seen floating around is, well, the reason he wouldn't go to Green Bay right now is because, it would take him too long to learn the playbook system. And adjust to the offensive scheme. And so they're better off with the guy who's at least been in the system holding the clipboard. I heard you snicker. So dismantle that one for
right,
us.
Right, yeah. That argument is hilarious to me because it presumes the fact that you can decide that without even giving Kaepernick a tryout. Like, without even seeing what he can do with that system, then you have no way to make an informed decision. Like, maybe he can't grasp the system. Maybe it's a perfect fit for him, and he leads them to a Super Bowl. Like, you just, you can't know that.
Yeah, and not only that, this more applies, too, to over the summer, over the offseason, people should have been giving him a chance.
Right.
And then he would have had plenty of time to learn the system, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's why this argument is so disingenuous that, like, we don't know if Kaepernick will be this fit. Well, he was never given a chance to prove if he could be a fit or not. Like, no teams gave him tryouts. No teams invited him to OTAs or minicamps. Like, how can you possibly make that decision if he hasn't been out on the field?
Yeah, it's okay. One thing if right now you don't pick him up, because honestly, that I can't think of, I'm not sure, Chris, what you'll think, but I can't think of very many examples of where mid-season a quarterback is added to a team that isn't currently playing. That doesn't really ever happen, does it? I mean, most of the time you're figuring this out in the preseason, the offseason. You know, you're trying to get your roster lined up, right? I can't think of an example, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, generally, especially for a position like that, like, you want a guy who either went through your OTAs, minicamps, preseason, or you want a guy who went through some other team's OTAs, minicamps, preseason, because you know, okay, he's been out on the field. He'll probably be a little rusty. He might need to adjust to some stuff, but he's been there within the past year or so. And by denying Kaepernick the ability to do even that, like, they're further limiting his chances at getting a job, because all these coaches now, and as you just said, are saying, oh, well, you know, he's not going to be a fit. Well, again, you didn't give him a chance to prove if he could be a fit. So it's its own self-defeating prophecy.
So let's turn to paragraph 18 of Kaepernick's complaint, because here's where he sets out his allegations against the NFL and the teams. I should add, as you read this, this is very much like, this is a grievance filed in a demand for arbitration, because it's a collective bargaining agreement, so it's not a lawsuit. But this is very much like the way you would plead any complaint against anyone in U.S. District Court. You make your allegations, and then we go forward, and either if the allegations are not sufficient to give rise to a cause of action, then the defendant can move to dismiss. That treats the allegations as if they're true for purposes of deciding whether to go forward with the case. Or if they would be sufficient to give rise, if true, but the defendants say, well, no, that's just not true, then you're entitled to go to discovery, and you're entitled to get the information necessary to prove or disprove your claims. So here's his claims. Respondents, that is the NFL and the teams, have engaged in express or implied collusion by, one, prohibiting Mr. Kaepernick from practicing with any team, prohibiting Mr. Kaepernick from trying out with any team, and prohibiting Mr. Kaepernick from being employed by any team despite his qualifications. Two, I'm doing the numbers myself, so I think they're kind of distinct areas. Two, respondents have undertaken said collusive conduct in retaliation for Mr. Kaepernick's invocation of his rights under the First Amendment and his leadership in bringing attention to racial inequality and social justice. Said conduct has been manifest in NFL team owner communications with each other, with the executive branch of the United States government, right, meaning Trump and Pence, on social media, and through efforts announced by the NFL Commissioner Goodell on October 10th, 2017, just last week, to enact rules and regulations not previously on the book to prohibit and preclude Mr. Kaepernick and other players from kneeling. So there are his two arguments. Let's parse them out. How would you go about demonstrating, other than, right, we've set out the obvious, right, which is to say an inference that Kaepernick is 29, his performance has been such that it's inexplicable that he did not receive invitations to try out with any team. Okay, so we've sort of made, and yet, you know, here we are, lots of worse players have jobs, and lots of unbelievably worse players have jobs.
That's where I think the first section of the argument, he, like, that's where football makes it really, really easy to make a point like that, because mm-hmm. you keep stats on everything. And yeah. contracts are determined that way. So if you can point to your stats and say, okay, here's exactly how I played. Here's how it relates to other players with similar stats. Am I being treated the same way? Because that's what every agent does every time they negotiate a contract for a player. Like they're looking at that player's stats versus generally the five other players that have similar stats and what those players' contracts are. Like that is a staple of the NFL. So when it comes to a lawsuit like this, it's very easy to say, okay, here's Colin Kaepernick's stats. Here's the five other players that have stats like his. How are those players being treated? And if all of those five other players are in the league and are starting quarterbacks and Kaepernick is not, it's a fairly simple argument to say, well, what's the difference between the two?
Yeah. And so my question is, in buttressing that case, what, like, I can imagine asking for communications between, buy-in among the NFL owners, between each team and the NFL's central offices, all of that sort of stuff. That's pretty standard in discovery. I don't know if you can tell us, you know, what kind of documents or discovery you sought in your case to try and prove up your claim?
Yeah, so we were looking for, we never made it to discovery because the Vikings ended up settling. But
oh, I see.
We were looking to get all communications between the owners, the coaching staff, and any outside sources that may have been, you know, part of determining what ended up happening with me. And essentially, NFL teams really don't want that to happen. They really don't want you to see those emails. And so I would imagine that's what Kaepernick will be looking for. And he would also probably be looking for any communications between the scouting departments, and external between teams, different scouting departments, because those guys talk to each other a lot. And, you know, they're always evaluating talent, and especially leading up to like the draft. Like, teams have that giant draft board where they slot in everyone on the draft. And in addition to players that are available in the draft, they're also looking at, okay, what are the guys that we can acquire outside of the draft? Can we potentially replace one of these draft spots with someone from outside so we can use that spot on someone else?
That's an excellent point that I hadn't considered. Now, let me sort of spin that out a little bit. Presumably, whatever the state of kind of top-down directives from the NFL or buyer among the NFL owners, when you ask your scouting guy to render an opinion on Colin Kaepernick, right? His opinion is just going to be a football opinion, right? He's not, right? That's what scouts do. That's yep. That's the whole point. And so I think it would be really, really good evidence if, you have some of these teams, if, you know, the Ravens head scout was asked to do a report on Kaepernick, or, you know, any of these other teams where you might logically go, well, that person sort of seems like that, you know, that team seems like that would be a good fit. And if you were able to turn up a glowing scouting report, mm-hmm. that would strongly buttress that.
Right.
That
is. Well, so, and I, like, this is obviously pure speculation on my part, but I would be willing to bet large amounts of money that there is at least one scouting report out there crafted by a team scouting department that goes through Kaepernick's upsides and downsides. And in the upsides, it says, could help immediately on the team, could pick up system, is a mobile quarterback, can throw the ball. And the downside says, negative attention, probably not worth it. And so that's right there, where you're saying, okay, he has the skills to play in the NFL, but you're saying you don't like this other thing that he's doing, and that's why you're not having him on the team.
Now, yeah. Let me ask you, Andrew, then, where does that reach the level of, like, collusion or whatever? Because if they try to say, well, just every team has said they don't want the distraction, where does that leave us?
Yeah, and what I would want to see as a lawyer is I would want to see how that overall, because Chris is talking about the final evaluation being prepared by the scouting department. Mm-hmm. What I would want to see is, what are the underlying documents, right? Who added that notation, right? Because the scout, right? I mean, a lot of scouts are, 20-year-old kids who are out there Obviously, some are older. And I'm drawing this. I have baseball clients, so I defer to Chris if scouts in the NFL are a little different.
Yeah, actually, football's a bit different. Most of them tend to be older guys. They're usually like 40, 45 or so, and they've just been around forever. And
I guess that's because there's such a huge volume of college baseball players, right? The cut is so huge from even top level college baseball players to pro organizations that you can get players like that. Okay, so I amend that statement. Nevertheless, a scout is being called upon to render an athletic evaluation. Mm-hmm. The scout is not going to add, you know, that. Negative attention, not worth it. Somebody in the organization is going to add that notation.
So here's the thing though. The scout, it's part of the scout's job to look for stuff like that. And so I would actually, if I was Kaepernick's lawyers, I would be really, really happy if the NFL decided to pursue that route, because then the next step that you would take is you would say, I want to see all of your scouting reports on players who were convicted of domestic violence, drunk driving, all these other things. What did you do with them?
But the issue that I think that's clever. They're going to resist that as.
Oh yeah, no, of course they will. Like they want no part of that.
but what the concern that I have that was sort of the predicate of Thomas's question is, if teams independently say this guy isn't worth the trouble, then that's not collusion under Article 17. Right. So you don't want to have a situation where you're inadvertently handing the NFL and the teams a defense of no. Like there was no collusion. We never agreed. There's just the NFL.
Yeah,
and we
there's
just said,
no collusion. You know, we all just suck equally simultaneously.
The thing is, though, is that I think if it got to the discovery process of that, there would be emails between scouts, because again, these guys all know each other. They all talk with each other. You would probably have an email chain in there somewhere where someone's talking about Kaepernick. Like, hey, what do you think about this guy? And the instant you can show that two teams have agreed that, yeah, this negative attention is, you know, that's why we're not gonna take him. Now you have collusion.
Yep. Yeah. No. That I agree with, and I would add, I meant to footnote this when Chris, when you were talking about your case. I can't comment on your case. I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, as somebody who has litigated, hundreds of cases in my career, when a party settles before discovery, that is almost always because they know that discovery is going to produce something that's going to make it even more expensive for them to settle.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's, I had a pretty good idea.
that's a fair inference to draw from that. Well, you know, sometimes people think like, am I drawing a reasonable inference? Like,
now,
yeah, that's the inference
I
would draw.
Let me play one more Goodell's advocate, or something.
Yeah.
Is it somehow different if two scouts, because you said they all talk to each other, and I'm going to assume that's not collusion. Is it somehow different when they agree, his intangibles, you know, his political stuff, not worth it, than if two scouts talk to each other and say, yeah, his completion rate, yeah, it's not high enough, probably don't bother. I mean, those seem like the same to me insofar as they're colluding, like they're talking to each other about a player. Is it somehow fundamentally different when it's a football stat versus a distraction thing?
Yeah, because if it's a football stat, that goes to the player's actual performance. And that's something where, you know, obviously if you're not good enough to play in the NFL, then that is a legit reason to not be in the NFL. Kind of like how you would not have a case for collusion against the NFL since no teams have signed you.
Wow, okay.
I mean, not to be hurtful.
To okay. You haven't seen my film.
I'm more than happy to take a look at it, but on something like that, that's not, I'm not a lawyer, but from my standpoint, that isn't collusion, because those actually are football metrics, and that is what the scouts, that's their job. Their job is to figure out, okay, is this guy good enough to play or not? The problem a lot comes when the guy is good enough to play. Your scouts say he's good enough to play, but then they also make note of the fact that, yeah, he's good enough to play, but there's this other thing, because that's not covered under the CBA. Like, there's nothing in the CBA that says if you're political, you don't get to play in the NFL.
Hmm. And I would add, I mean, the standard is that the club, its employees or agents shall enter into any agreement express or implied regarding, you know, whether to sign, whether offer a contract or, you know, the money that you're offering a player. And kind of the way in which that would spin out is if signing a player would materially improve one club vis-a-vis another club, then you might expect that some kind of weighing might take place in that discussion, right? They like, oh, well, right, you're saying he's, you know, his athletic ability is still there. What if we pass on him and Team Y signs him? And then the scout writes back and says, don't worry, nobody is going to touch this guy. He's radioactive.
Mm, right.
Something like that. And that's, and you would need that that additional point, right? Because remember, yep, it's not enough to just show that, you know, two teams talked, you know, talk dirt about Kaepernick, that there has to be an agreement, but it can be an implicit agreement.
Right.
So
yeah, if they both came to the same scouting conclusion that, yeah, this guy's good, he could help our team, but, you know, I don't think we should take him because of this. And, you know, I talked with this other guy and yeah, he's of the same opinion. I think that's where you really start getting into the collusion territory, because now it's a, okay, this word of mouth is being spread throughout the league and that's preventing him from getting a job.
Well, and so, I mean, since we've kind of talked about the first prong of the allegations, let's talk about the second prong. Cause I'm really curious in your experience, right? The second prong is there is communication by and among NFL teams from the NFL executive offices to teams that are, you know, sort of opposed to bringing to the fore these kinds of social justice issues. And I thought you might have some thoughts on
that. Yeah. No, I think this is the area where the NFL is well and truly fucked, because they have had President Trump on Twitter demanding certain things happen. You've had Jerry Jones on Twitter saying, yep, I would like this to happen because I talked with President Trump. He reminded me of it. And I mean, it is clear cut at this point. It's like, okay, well, if the president's giving you your marching orders and then you decide to follow them, that's collusion. Like, there's,
let me push back on that. Mm-hmm. If the NFL agrees, takes marching orders from the president and then does not require, and you can't show that the NFL has passed that down to the clubs, I don't know that fits the definition of Article 17, right? It's scummy, but I don't know that would be grounds for relief. You have to find, in other words, we have that first prong, right? Mm-hmm. We clearly have, you know, the Jerry Jones tweet. We have the strong inference of, you know, the president says there should be a rule requiring them to kneel. And then a week later, Goodell says, I'm going to promulgate a rule requiring players to kneel. Not to kneel.
Yeah.
So you get that first half, but how do you get the second half?
So the second half has already been reported on. I think it was Mike Freeman from the Bleacher Report. He was talking to players inside the Cowboys who had said that Jerry Jones made it clear in a team meeting that anyone who knelt was not going to play.
Okay. Now, but you still, that now you've got one team. Now we need a team. We need either proof that because I'm just, you know, playing Trump's advocate here.
Sure.
If I represent the Cowboys in the NFL, I'll say, yeah, look, that's clear. Jerry Jones feels very strongly about it. He tweeted about it. Maybe he even took his marching orders from the president. But Jerry Jones telling his players what to do isn't collusion. It would be collusion if the NFL told Jerry Jones to tell his players what to do, mm-hmm. or if, you know, the Eagles told Jerry Jones to tell his players what to do. But it's not collusion for him to do it.
Well, so here's the interesting thing, though, is that the NFL is the owners of the NFL. So Jerry Jones is the NFL. He's a part of it. So if what you would want to do is, in discovery, you would want to look at all of Jerry Jones's communications with the other owners. And again, that's likely to never happen. They will settle before that happens. But that's what you would go looking for, because from the way the league is set up, Jerry Jones is essentially the owner of the league. Like, what he wants happens. For example, the Raiders moving to Las Vegas, that only happens because Jerry Jones wants it to happen. Like, he is the guy who's in charge. Now, you know, he's not 100% dictator in charge, but generally what Jerry wants, Jerry gets. And so if you look through his emails, I would be more than willing to bet that there are a couple in there between him and some other owners talking about what to do about Kaepernick, and Jerry talking about what he's doing about Kaepernick. So I think...
Oh, wow. Okay, well, that's great. See, this is yet another reason why we wanted to have you on the show. I had no idea that Jerry Jones was the capo of the NFL.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, if you're not fan, you probably don't know that. Like, this requires a fairly deep structural understanding of the NFL. But, like, it is basically for the last 20, 25 years, it's been Jerry's league.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about the Patriots owner? Where is he?
Yeah,
on
Kraft.
Kraft. So Kraft is kind of a foil for Jones. Like, he doesn't have quite as much power, but he can still make things happen. It's my completely speculative guess, being that I have never been in owners' meetings, is that Jerry has a sizable contingent on his side, and then the Kraft, the Maras, and the Rooneys are kind of the opposite side. And it's probably a power struggle between those two as to what direction the league goes in.
Hmm. So how does that all legally sound to you, Andrew? Is it the kind of thing where it's like, it sounds like in all of this, it's like you need to get to discovery, and then it's going to be a question of, can you get there or will they settle? Is that pretty much how this is going to shake out?
Yeah, well, I would love to get Chris's prediction on this, but it sounds, if I can kind of summarize what we've heard here, from my perspective, a lot of ink has been spilled. Some of it ridiculous. There was an article in the New York Daily News that said, you know, you'll never be able to prove collusion, and Kaepernick is now done, and he's, you know, burned all his bridges, and, you know, good riddance or whatever. That's stupid, because Article 17 expressly says that the collusion can be express or implied. Mm-hmm. And the players' representatives bargained to get that language in there, knowing, because they had smart legal counsel, and knowing that proving express collusion is almost impossible, but proving implied collusion isn't that hard.
Right. you just need a couple emails, and all of a sudden you're there.
Yeah. And it absolutely does hinge on discovery. And Chris, the point that you've made repeatedly, if I could guess your prediction, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that it is very likely that there will be a strong incentive for the league not to permit discovery to go forward.
Yes.
So why don't I turn it over to you and let you put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah. So my prediction is, based off my own personal experiences and what I've seen from how the NFL works, is that there will be probably a span of about 6 to 9 months where it's going to get very messy and very ugly, where you're going to hear from a lot of anonymous sources about how Kaepernick's play had declined, about how he, you know, really wasn't an effective leader anymore, possible locker room spats, you know, angry at other players, didn't get along with team owners, things like that. Like, they're going to do everything in their power to bury him via character assassination, because they want to try to make him give up. Assuming he makes it through all that and is able to stay consistent and, you know, keep it in the public eye, encounter with, okay, no, here's what I've done. Here's my charitable donations here. You know, here's the actual work that I've been putting in. It will get to the point where it's going to be, okay, now we're going to file for discovery. And that's where the league will be, well, how can we settle this? Like, what will make this go away? And so that's where a really interesting, choice arises for Colin, because the NFL will probably make him a very nice offer. Like, it'll be, they will want it to go away, because they do not want those emails to get out in the public. Like, they don't want anything of the NFL to get out in the public. The thing is, if Kaepernick presses, there's not a guarantee, you know, that he's going to win the lawsuit, and his lawyers are going to tell him that, right? Because there's never a guarantee that you're going to win. You could have slam dunk evidence, yep. but that's still not a guarantee. And
so, can I get you to talk to my clients, Chris? Because I will put you on speed dial on retainer.
Right. Yeah. So the thing is that as from Kaepernick's perspective, he has to decide, okay, do I think I've done enough to where this will make legitimate change? Do I think I've been able to do something that will help people, or do I think I need to take this farther? And I mean, that's a decision that only he can make, because he absolutely can take it farther. Like, you know, there's nothing that says he has to accept a settlement. Like, he could totally try and push it through. But
yeah, I mean, he could have the mindset that, like, I don't need, it's not about the money, it's about the point, you know, and
right.
he could just pursue it all the way, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's what my lawsuit was. Like, that's the reason why I didn't ask for any money for myself, is that I didn't want money. Like, I didn't want the Vikings to pay me. I wanted there to be the knowledge that they had done something wrong and that was recognized. And so that's where I ended up, you know, taking my settlement, because it was like, okay, great. They're going to donate a ton of money to LGBTQ charities, which is going to help a lot of these places, you know, do work that needs to be done. And it's going to be, okay, yes, Chris was wrongfully terminated. Like, that's it. You know, this wasn't because of his playing. We screwed up. So it's like I said, it's going to be up to Kaepernick. It just depends what he wants to do. I mean, he's made plenty of money. Like, he's not in any financial distress. So there's really, it's amazing how much more willing you are to fight in a lawsuit when you really don't have any financial stakes on the line. they have no leverage over you, right? Because for a lot of people, you know, lawsuits are, I have been wronged in some way, I need to get money back in order to go back to living my life. Like, that's, you know, kind of what.
Well,
and
for NFL players in general, we've talked about it a lot on this show, when it comes to collective bargaining and stuff, they're so disadvantaged because the career is so short. You know, they need the money, they need, you know, they don't want to take a year off and strike. I mean, there's a lot of pressure,
right,
that they're under.
And so the thing, though, is that in Kaepernick's situation, he's actually in a pretty good situation, in that he played, what, I think 7 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, something like that. He had a pretty good contract. He's made, you know, a significant amount of money. From everything I've read, he's been smart with it. He probably knows he's never going to play in the NFL again, no matter what this lawsuit ends up doing. And so if he does want to take it all the way, then he is in a position where he can take it all the way. It's just that the only thing he has to prepare for is that if he does want to pursue that, the NFL is going to try to get as dirty as they possibly can.
Yeah. And from a strategic perspective, you know, his lawyers are going to file their discovery requests right away. And what the NFL is going to do, and I know, having been on both sides of this, is they're going to produce the first, they're going to take as much time as possible to get, they're going to say, okay, well, you've asked us to, you know, look through emails of 32. So it's going to take us X amount of time to, you know, dig through and find the emails. And then they're going to, you know, release out a trickle at a time, and then they're going to refuse to do so. And then you're going to have to, and this is, you know, it's an arbitration. So it moves a little faster than a trial, but it's still kind of trial-like, in that, you know, you're going to have to Kaepernick's lawyers are going to have to draft up a motion to compel, and they're going to have to say, we've asked for X, Y, and Z, and we haven't gotten it. And here's the inference that we know we're not getting all the emails because, you know, we got this document that is from A to B, and we got a copy from A, but we didn't get a copy from B. So that tells you that, you know, you haven't searched B's emails thoroughly. And, you know, you are 100% correct that, you know, when you're represented by a big law firm, a kind that I spent almost 20 years in, they can string out that process for a long, long time. And yeah, I think your prediction is also correct about the PR offensive that's about to get waged against him.
So one interesting thing that I want to point out, because I think it's probably going to sneak past a lot of people's radars, is the very last paragraph in the PDF. for Kaepernick, number 20. The one that says, based on the public statements made by NFL owners and NFL Commissioner Goodell regarding the foregoing matters, claimant Colin Kaepernick respectfully requests that the NFL and its team owners waive such confidentiality requirements as may exist under Article 15, Section 10, and permit all proceedings to be presumptively open to the public. Now, I think that is an amazingly clever move by his lawyers, because Article 15, Section 10 is confidentiality. This is in the CBA. It says, unless the parties agree otherwise, proceedings before the system arbitrator and appeals panel, other than their decisions, shall be confidential and may not be disclosed to persons other than counsel, senior executives of the NFL and any involved club, senior executives of the NFLPA, the NFLPA executive committee, NFLPA player representatives, and any involved players, player agents, or club or league personnel. So basically, due to the fact that the NFL has been talking about this so much in social media and in public, and President Trump has as well, Kaepernick is like, okay, well, if you're going to make it public, then we're going to make it public and we're going to show everything that you're doing, which I think is a really heavy hammer being held over the NFL's head, because they can't, it's going to be really hard for them to argue against that.
That is a great catch at the, this is, I think a really excellent point, because right. What the NFL is going to have to do is respond to paragraph 20, and they're either going to have to concede, which they won't, or they're going to have to oppose that request and then give their reasons, therefore, and presumably, you know, Mark Garagos is a little bit familiar with how to litigate cases in the press. And you will see the stories that say, you know, the NFL wants to talk about this, but they only want to selectively release their narrative. We went out and we said, okay, if you want to talk about it, let's have the proceedings be open to the public. We don't have anything to hide. I think that's a really excellent point.
Yeah, because that's also something that I did with my lawsuit was I was like, I don't care, make it public. Like I have no problems with that. And, you know, because the thing is that what the teams and what the NFL is worried about is that something's going to pop up in discovery that may just be tangential to the case, but it's enough to get it included and it makes them look really, really bad. So that's yep. why I think settlement is ultimately how this is going to shake out.
Yeah. And the standard in discovery for refusing to produce a document on relevance grounds, relevant is defined exceedingly broadly as any fact that has the tendency to make any material fact more or less likely in the scope of the litigation. And so, you know, as you kind of correctly point out, that's a really broad standard, right? Like as we lawyers know when we're drafting oppositions to discovery requests that you almost never solely object on the ground of relevance because it's such an exceedingly broad
area. Right.
So I think that's 100% correct.
Yeah. Well, and if I was Kaepernick's lawyer too, I'd be looking at those owner emails and being like, let me see if I can find anything racist in here because that will be relevant and it's going to make him look terrible.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Well, with that prediction, I suppose maybe we can draw to a close here. What do you think, Andrew? Mm-hmm. Or did you want to make a prediction as well?
I'm gonna
defer to our
expert.
Love the opportunity to prove you wrong later on. So,
but Chris, if you wanna tell folks a little bit about what you're doing now, where they can find you, and
sure, yeah. So now I'm the stay at home dad, and yeah, it's a lot of fun. I get to
so you can they can find you by stalking your house.
Oh yes, yeah. Please don't stalk my house. No, you can find me on Twitter at Chris Warcraft, where I generally do doom and gloom predictions about our current political state of affairs. So that's fun. Swing on by. I have also designed a tabletop card game that is essentially the reason for designing it was I love playing Magic, but I hate all the broken parts of Magic that make it unfun. So I made my own game that hopefully doesn't have unfun parts. And it's called Twilight of the Gods. It's available for sale. TOTGgame.com or just search Victory Point Games Twilight of the Gods. And yeah, if you like Magic, check it out because I think you will really like it.
And I have to throw an endorsement there. My son Alex has been playing the game and absolutely loves it. So that's a personal. Same thing. He was big into Magic and but not big into the broken aspects. And he has found it just totally fascinating. So
awesome. Thanks.
So there's that recommendation.
That's great. One of the great, many great things about Chris is that he's actually such a nerd. So he would rather talk. I think you said it when we talked before, Chris, that you'd far rather talk about tabletop games, design, game design, anything than football. And I think it's so funny that you know, people might not necessarily expect that of an NFL jock.
Yeah, it's because my entire life, like, I've been a nerd. I just also happen to be pretty good at sports. So football paid the bills, but yeah. This is what I like
That's
doing.
That's so awesome.
I am the exact same way, only not good at sports.
Just the nerd part. Only that part.
No, thank you so much for being here, Chris, and for walking us through. I mean, this is really fascinating for me, and I learned a lot, and I think our listeners are going to enjoy it.
Cool. Yeah. No, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. Great stuff. Man, it is so fun talking to Chris. I could talk to him all day, and I did. I talked to him all night one time, and I could do it again because it's so fun. He's a great guy. I really, really love Chris. Check out his game, everyone, if you're into card games. He talks passionately about it. I mean, he really, really is into game design at a very high level. Super cool to hear him talk about it.
Yeah. And he is not, I got this all secondhand from my son, Alex, but this is not a like knockoff Magic game with different colored cards. Like this is really,
no, it's the real deal.
Yeah. I mean, he talked to me at great length and I processed about 30% of it, but about, you know, focusing on the mechanics first. So if you like playing card games, Twilight of the Gods, we're going to put a link in the show notes. And I love, by the way, Chris is such a humble guy. I want to emphasize again what came out sort of parenthetically. Like, I did not know that he settled his lawsuit against the Vikings for nothing, and 100% of the money went to LGBTQ charities. That's just, I don't know what more needs to be said other than calling attention to that.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. I'm so happy he was on. I really enjoyed that.
No, I think I am very restrained, and I talk about important things.
I'm going to do very restrained if I use it at all. I'm going to do very restrained. I find it tremendous. It's a modern form of communication. There should be nothing you should be ashamed of. It's where it's at.
But now we've got to get to a less pleasant topic, which is Hillary Clinton's damned emails. Now, did Trump tweet something? Now, you never know. I people could post a fake tweet of Trump, and it's hard to tell the difference because everything he tweets is ridiculous. But did he tweet that Jim Comey, like, colluded with Hillary somehow, or like leaked to her and got her off scot-free? Because that is about as absurd as it gets, given that all the evidence points to Comey's letter is one of the main reasons that Hillary lost, and a big change in the election.
That is absolutely. So the tweet is, wow, FBI confirms report that James Comey drafted letter exonerating crooked Hillary Clinton long before investigation was complete. Many .. And second tweet, people not interviewed, including Clinton herself. Comey stated under oath that he didn't do this, obviously a fix. Where is Justice Department?
Oh, my God. So
that's the allegation.
Also, that's very presidential, by the way. Official statement from the president. Wow. Like, what is anyway, go on. That's just Trump. That's Trump being Trump.
And again, as you point out, there is no question. I mean, I don't know. I invite our Republican listeners to dispute this. There is no dispute that on balance, the effect of Jim Comey in the 2016 presidential election was disastrous to Hillary Clinton. Every time he made two public appearances, and both times corresponded with drastic drops in the polls for Clinton. Now, again, you know, there are all sorts of other stuff around. We've done elections to death. It's not worth going into. But the notion that FBI Director James Comey was in the tank for Hillary Clinton is preposterous. The notion that there was anything wrong with the statement is something we covered at great length in episode 16. It's one of our most downloaded episodes, something I'm really, really proud of, that we went and kind of systematically went through the potential charges and showed how Hillary Clinton's emails were of a very different kind than the cases that were brought, and essentially validated the conclusion that that Comey came to, which was that, you know, there was that I think he put it, no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case under these facts. So the document that was released, I'm going to link this in the show notes, because when I first looked at the document, I was like, well, wait, why is I don't have the right document. You do have the right document. It's a 5-page document. Page one says deleted page, and it has all these little like page 1-B5 semicolon, total deleted pages 18. Okay. Page two says total deleted pages 47, and has the same like kind of crazy caption, page 44-B5 semicolon. Don't know what that means. Page three says deleted page, no duplication fee for this page. Page four is an email from James E. Rybicki, who's a staffer at the FBI, that says, so produced from his files. It says, from James Comey, sent Monday, May 2nd, 2016, 7:15 p.m. to Andrew G. McCabe, James A. Baker, Office of General Counsel, James E. Rybicki, CC to himself, subject mid-year exam -- unclassified. And then it says classification unclassified, transitory record. And then there's a giant white redaction box. And then the next page has a few more, is from Rybicki to a bunch of different people. Peter Strozok, Jonathan Maffa, Baker, Tricia Anderson, somebody whose name is redacted, and E.W. Priestap, CCing McCabe and David Bowditch. So not Comey, unless he's one of the redacted names, that has on that email a comment that says, please send me any comments on this statement so we may roll into a master doc for discussion with the director at a later date. Thanks, Jim. And that Jim refers to Rybicki. And then it contains the text of the previous email that was redacted from the previous page, which one may infer was the draft statement, whatever it is, that was prepared by Comey. So my apologies for getting way down in the weeds on that, but literally there's one line of this document. This 5-page document says, please send me any comments on this statement so we may roll into a master doc for discussion with the director at a future date. And
that proves that
everything else is redacted, right? So you can't even see what it is.
What is this supposed to be?
What it's supposed to say, the implication that Trump and his sycophants are drawing from it is, Comey had drafted the statement exonerating Hillary Clinton in advance. This was circulated. The Rybicki letter went out May 16th, and the email from Comey to Rybicki went out on May 2nd. And so it's saying, look, that was before anybody talked to Hillary Clinton. So it is clear that the fix was in, and all of this was just, you know, window dressing.
Uh-huh.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
It is literally crazy, because we don't have the underlying statement to know how it changed. And I have talked to two separate prosecutors before in researching for this show, and the standard policy in determining whether to bring a case against a potential target is they're the last person you talk to, right? And so you have a really good illustration of this going on right now, which is to say, you have not seen any indication that the ongoing Mueller investigation intends to talk to Trump. Now, obviously, he's going to stonewall because of executive privilege, but they're not interested in talking to Trump right now. You talk to the target when you have your evidence lined up, because that's when you bring them in and say, okay, here's what we've got. And you either force them into some kind of a plea bargain, or you tell them, okay, you know, we have come to a full conclusion that we're not going to proceed against you. That is 100% standard operating procedure. Mm-hmm. This inference is ridiculous. The fact, I think I saw Lindsey Graham kind of jump on, which is, it's really disappointing. I mean, there's somebody who ought to know better.
He endorsed this nonsense?
There's no fire.
Wow. Yeah.
There's no smoke. There's no fire. There's no proof that Jim Comey had the fix in for Hillary Clinton, which is just.
He went out of his way. He didn't have to do so much of what he did. He went out of his way to do a press conference condemning her, which is not the duty of the FBI to reprimand in the public eye someone who they concluded they're not going to press charges or no one would press charges.
And remember that, I mean, we dealt with the question of, you know, in August of last year of, you know, is Jim Comey, you know, a right-wing hack trying to take down Hillary Clinton? And we defended him from that charge, but like, I would love to know the world in which it's
changed my mind a little bit on that. I don't think he was a right-wing hack, but I do think he was, he went out of bounds in terms of what he did, but not, you know, it's still such a far cry. It's the opposite of helping Hillary or being in it like that. That's absurd. I mean, if he wanted to help Hillary, there's a billion things he would have done differently. I mean, that's just manifestly obvious.
Yep. Complete agreement. But nevertheless, that's the new narrative. Comey can't be trusted because the fix was in because of this redacted document that is, even if it is what they think it is, it would be perfectly ordinary. We don't know what it says because everything's redacted. So
ridiculous. All right. That's that. I mean, we could probably get more into that, but looks like we're a little short on time and we've got to get to one of our co-favorite times of the week. I mean, it really is top two, could be tied for first, which is thanking our new patrons.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to start with Joseph Couch, Russell's Lonely Little Teapot. That's a nice one. Logan, thank you. Ken DR, Larry Brightonfield Jr., Billy Fleming, and Halday Roberts. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah. And thank you to Donate to Extra Life. Search team, press start. Benefit Children's Hospital. Thank you to Craig Marshall, Terry Cannon, Article 15, and Paul S. Enns. Thank you all so much for pledging. We couldn't do the show without you, and we really do appreciate everybody who supports the show.
Absolutely. That's patreon.com/law, and you get all the benefits that Andrew alluded to earlier in the episode. And now it's time for a sort of maybe favorite time. We get to find out, was that bar exam question really that easy, or did I critically mess up?
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
Yeah, so bar exam question about a prenuptial agreement. Man says you are going to relinquish any claim to any property that I own prior to the relationship. Wife agrees, says you got to put it in writing. Guy never does. They get married. 3 months later, guy skips out for another woman and sends a note saying, get out of the house because it's mine. She doesn't move. Husband sues. Can the court enforce the husband's claim of an oral prenuptial contract? And I am going to skip all of the suspense. You said C, no, because a contract in consideration of marriage must be in writing and the prenuptial was therefore not legal as long as it remained oral. Absolutely correct. That's a requirement of marriage contracts. Prenuptial agreements must be in writing. I suspect there are some folks in our audience who may have firsthand experience with that.
This is one. There's a lot of experts out there, I'm sure.
Yep.
So, that's easy. And my eliminations obviously were good then. That's still alive. All right. Well, what does that put me at?
That puts you at 26 for 46. Right. You are assured of being over 500 for the first 50 and on a two-game winning streak.
If I can go on a four-question win streak here, I can get 60%. Why, that is... That's genius level, right? I mean, 60%, that's a D-.
I agree. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that said, hop in your time machine. Let's hear from future Andrew, who is this week's lucky winner. I'm going to guess there was a lot of competition because this one was pretty easy. So hopefully someone had a good slash funny slash interesting answer.
Yes, Thomas, this week's winner is Hebe Jeebus. That is at Clues de Azul, at CLUESDEAZUL on Twitter, who writes, TTTBE, common sense eliminations can account for 75% of the exam today. The answer is obviously C. I don't think anybody missed this question, but I enjoyed Hebe Jeebus's name, and I think this is his first time playing TTTBE, so congratulations, you're this week's winner. Everyone give Hebe Jeebus a follow on Twitter, and thanks to everybody for playing.
All right, well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Chris Cluey. It's always fun to talk to that guy. He really is excellent. That was really interesting and an insightful, direct experience. So thanks to Chris so much. Hope we can talk to him again sometime. And thanks, Andrew, for taking us through all the ins and outs as usual. And we'll have to see everybody on Friday.
Stop breaking the law, asshole!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.